Around the NFL podcast. The history is very rich here.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I am in a room that's filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Colleen Wolf herself, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, people?
Hey, Dan.
I don't appreciate this.
Poor Colleen.
What was the source information on that one, Lindsay?
The history is very rich here.
This is never going to leave me, ever. I can't believe this. I can't believe you figured this out.
That was from your job working for the Poconos Valley Golf Course. What was it called?
Yeah, it was a show I hosted called Inside Golf.
Yeah, just got to let the list.
Did you feel that way about the setting when you were there? Were you that swept up? Because there's multiple comments like that about where you were in the Poconos.
I think my mental state was in question at that point.
Would you define it as like a serene setting?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It's just such a serene setting.
I hate you.
This is the Tuesday edition of the Around the NFL podcast. Apologies for promising a show Monday, but then at the same time, it's like, well, what did it cost? What did it cost you? You know, it didn't
not
show
a sense.
Up.
So slow down with your criticism.
It didn't show up. We decided because we did a juicy, supersized show on Saturday, let that sucker breathe, get the tiny box back from Dallas.
Back.
Get Sessler back from jury duty and have a real powerhouse show because this is one of my favorite shows of the offseason, which is around the AFC in 48 minutes. This is the whole reason the genesis of this segment
very specific.
Was
NFC banged in a big spot.
Well, that will be Friday or Thursday. When is it?
Thursday.
We'll do the NFC. AFC goes first. It started once upon a time because when we used to be able to play music, I just wanted to have something to build around this, the Daft Punk banger around the world. We can't play that anymore. We can play this, which kind of sounds like Around the World by Daft Punk.
Taking me back to Dallas.
This is our yes, our rights-free library. So we can't play Daft Punk, but that's the vibe we're going for.
I think when you get into like the EDM electronica world, yeah. Like the knockoff to most people, there's almost no discernible difference from the original. I mean, to Wes, right. Do you feel something completely different in that product we just listened to?
That's definitely Daft Punk.
If we did like what do they call A/B testing and played Daft Punk and that, Wes, would you be able to tell?
I mean, no. If you would have said they're not even singing. Who spins this song? Whoever they are, who spins this song? I would have said certainly Daft Punk.
Colleen, a lot of EDM when you were in Dallas for the draft.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of music, a lot of nights out. I actually the night before I left, I went out with Jane Slater and company, and Tamposi was there, and MVP, and we stayed out
pretty
late.
That influence is all.
And I got back to the hotel, and I had to go to the airport. So I had, like, about 20 minutes to lay down and take a nap. And so I get to the airport, and I'm going through security, and I have my hood up, and I'm not in a very good spot. And the woman behind me is the most cheery person from Dallas I've ever heard in my life. And she goes, you know, you kind of look like that girl who hosted the draft.
That's amazing.
What did you say?
And I just smiled, and at that point, I had like my retainers in. It was like a and I was like, thanks.
That's right. There was Thursday night, especially when all the world's watching the draft. It was attack of the 50-foot, 5-foot woman.
Yeah,
Connie Fox on this giant screen in Dallas. The whole time, you were like a star of the draft.
It was almost better than being on the actual broadcast because you know that. Daniel Jeremiah was tiny in comparison to the Colleen Wolf image that was right above his head on national
television. Yeah, well, I made sure that, you know, when they blocked all of the cameras, that my face would make it into every camera shot, no matter who was talking.
Only slightly Machiavellian by you.
Right.
Seems like you guys are very family friendly here.
So Connie Fox is with us back from Dallas. Not quite a debutante, but maybe you go down there again, you hang out with Jane Slater again. You know, you're
heading there.
Jane Slater's Instagram feed is basically a nonstop party. I feel like you could end up getting sucked into that culture. Just one more trip, maybe.
I don't know. We'll have to see. Maybe.
Exciting. Exciting times. Yes. Around the AFC in 48 minutes. This is what we like to do right after the draft. So free agency in the rear view, the draft now in the rear view. Let's get a good up-close look at each of the 32 teams in the league. We start with the American Football Conference. 3 minutes. Lindsay, full time behind the glass. This is a very important show for you because you are in charge of the timer. 3 minutes, and we have to stick to it. 3 minutes max for each team.
I'll give you guys some warnings.
Okay, good.
As we move along.
That's important. So we're going to go through every team. This year, I'm mixing it up a little bit. Keep everybody on their toes.
Like that.
Sometimes I go by division in the past. This year, alphabetical order.
Isn't this Andy Reid's song?
Very close.
That's
very
next close. Level, Dan. Next level crowd confusion you're creating there. Alphabetical order.
Alphabetical order. 3 minutes a team. Each of us will take our turn. We'll go through it three times. With Mark, you were the lucky man. You got a fourth team. So we're excited for what you have to say. You're excited about it, sounds like, by the looks of it.
Yeah, I mean, the division of labor.
Kind
of a little bit annoying, but that's fine.
Thank you a little bit. And each of us will be responsible for starting the conversation on the team that they are assigned. So, without further ado, you guys ready for this?
So much Please. Pressure.
Yeah. All right, let's go. Mark Sessler, get us going with the Baltimore Ravens.
All right, when the Ravens win the Super Bowl 2 years from now with Lamar Jackson tearing up the NFL, will the Baltimore franchise be polite and timely enough to hand Ozzie Newsome an honorary ring for what he did during this year's draft? Will they buy Ozzie a fleet of luxury cars, a string of self-driving motorboats, and 200 robot servants after it is deemed that Newsome found the best quarterback in the draft to replace a back-addled, slow-as-maple syrup oozing out of a tree, Joe Flacco? Let me ask it another way. Did any team do more this offseason to upset the apple cart in their own division?
Wow, I feel like I didn't prepare for this.
No one else did.
Okay.
No. Well, this is supposed to focus on the Ravens, though.
This is all about the Ravens.
But you're asking us what other teams upset the apple cart.
Well, all right.
Yes, they will give him a ring.
From a Ravens angle, I feel like the Ravens maybe blew up the AFC North a little bit with what they accomplished this offseason, where they came out of last year as one of the more milquetoast operations around.
I think as much as I am looking forward to seeing Lamar Jackson play and Joe Flacco is a huge injury risk, they've given Joe Flacco a better chance to succeed this year and hold off Lamar Jackson so that Lamar Jackson is really about the future. Not only, you know, do they get Jackson, but they get a first-round tight end. They get a third-round tight end, Mark Andrews, who a lot of people like. They add, we've talked about all the receivers, and they have some continuity on their defense and on their offensive line. It's a good chance at least for Harbaugh and Flacco to save their jobs. As excited as I am about Lamar Jackson, I think Flacco and Harbaugh have a decent chance to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I love what the Bucs and Bears have done, but I don't think anyone's had a better offseason than the Ravens.
Wow.
I think totally different about this team now. The defense and special teams were among the best in the NFL for 75% of last season until Jimmy Smith got injured. It's the offense that needed work, and the offense got work, a ton of work. I love what they've done on offense.
Yeah, I feel like tight end has been such an issue for them for so
T-minus
long.
T-minus one.
And so to finally
minute.
Have a nice first-round pick there, and also with Lamar Jackson, look at their offensive coordinator, Marty Morningweg. When he was in Philadelphia, he was there with Michael Vick, and he put together a ton of stuff for him to really showcase him. And I think when you're looking at Lamar Jackson and the skill set, he'll do the same with him.
Is John Harbaugh, who a lot of people, you heard it a lot, came very close to getting fired after the season. Is he potentially, if this team turns it around, is he like the head coach version of Les Snead, who was a guy on the ropes in L.A.?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, things got on track very quickly, and now Les has never been in a better position. Maybe John Harbaugh and the Ravens are in still going to be in a long-term marriage.
He has a better chance, but it's tricky. You have Jackson there. You're going to have to balance trying to win this year with Flacco. And Flacco, you know, not just hurt last year. He wasn't good.
10.
So can you win with him?
That defense last year was so good. They led the league in takeaways. That helped them.
Some people say Flacco ain't no fluke.
Some people say that pick was really DaCosta's pick for DaCosta's future. How about that theory?
Justin Tucker is great.
Don't like that theory at all.
Wes, the Buffalo Bills.
Prior to the draft, general manager Brandon Bean admitted to our Aditi Kinkabwala,
you know,
that the Bills are indeed rebuilding and have not yet arrived despite their playoff appearance. They had a pretty nice draft. They pick up Josh Allen, Tremaine Edwards, Harrison Phillips. How long until they can, you know, let's tell the Buffalo Bills fans, because they probably think they're ready to compete right now. How long, in your sober-minded view as a non-Bills fan,
Colleen's close,
do they have to wait before they can make a legitimate run at the Patriots for the division title?
I feel like that is as much to do with the Patriots as it does the Bills and what happens with Tom Brady and New England over the next couple seasons. That said, when you see a team successfully turn it around under a coach GM pairing, a lot of people say it needs to really show its earmarks by year two and absolutely by year three. If they aren't a playoff team by next season, one that we can count on, I will say this, that they don't look back on last year and over credit the roster and the team for what they have says a lot about that organization. I think they were not, we didn't view them as a real playoff team. They kind of backed in and they have a lot of work to do, as many needs as any team out there.
What do you think their quarterback situation is going to be? Because they do have this raw, unpolished talent at quarterback. And A.J. McCarron is the guy they signed, but who loves A.J. McCarron? Is he going to be their starter for most of the season?
I think it's a downgrade from Tyrod Taylor and a pretty significant downgrade. I never thought Tyrod
to
Taylor
Allen
was the
and McCarron,
answer.
You're yeah. saying? To both of them.
In year one of Allen, yes. I do think that. But I think that McCarron, I mean, we know that the Bengals never came close to thinking about replacing Andy Dalton with A.J. McCarron.
Well, Marvin Lewis is an idiot.
Tells me everything I need to know about A.J. McCarron.
It's a brand-new offense in Buffalo, too, which has gotten a little overshadowed. They fired their coordinator. They bring in Brian Daboll from Alabama. You got to think McCarron had a good draft, because if you were going to get paired with one of these rookie quarterbacks, I think it's fair to argue that Allen is the most raw and is going to give McCarron a chance to actually start a bunch of games.
The pass catchers make me really nervous there, but I love what they've done on defense in the offseason, bringing in Vontae Davis, Star Lotulelei, Trent Murphy. I think like that's going to be really good with Sean McDermott. But, I mean, if you have Josh Allen in there, who's surrounding him to help him? I mean, yeah, you have LeSean McCoy, but otherwise, who are you throwing the ball to?
A bad offensive line, too.
This will be
one of the worst offenses in the NFL this year.
It depends what you mean by contending. I don't see why they can't be a 9-10 win team if everything fell right for them this year, because McDermott's a good defensive coach. Like, if everything fell right.
Congratulations, your upside is 500.
Yeah. But that, if you have a young franchise quarterback in the building and you go 8-8, you're going in, that's fine. I feel like that's a victory if they have a 500 season, even though they made the playoffs last year.
I think we're going to see Josh Allen for at least 6 games.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Nate Peterman for a few games, too.
Ooh, not giving up on Peterman.
No, it's more about what A.J. McCarron is than what Nate Peterman is.
This is it.
Connie Fox, the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, all right, so the Bengals last year, they had one of the worst offensive lines. I mean, it was such a tragedy to watch. And now this year, they traded for Cordy Glenn. I like that they drafted Billy Penn, but Billy Price. But that whole right side of the line still has issues. They don't know who their right tackle is going to be. That's the second year. So I just don't know will the offensive line there in Cincinnati be the biggest problem again for this team? Did they do enough to sort of help the Bengals in that department?
That's a fair question. I think they're going to be light years ahead of where they were last year, but they still have more room to grow. I mean, last year's line was just atrocious, and it's hard to believe that they agreed to enter a season knowing that their line was that atrocious. But this year they've at least attempted to fix it. I think they'll be quite a bit better.
They're similar, not every year, because obviously there's changes, but they're always counting on their players on their own team to just get better, and that's kind of their MO. And they've been in a little bit of a down cycle, and if you're Marvin Lewis, I think maybe you convince Mike Brown that this team, Joe Mixon, for instance, and some other players, that they're ready to take a step up. The guys that are there, because they don't play their rookies that much, usually. Usually they sit their rookies for a year.
What is Marvin Lewis, what is his status with the Cincinnati Bengals after what was really a crazy turn of events?
Entirely unchanged. He will continue to exist on 1 and 2 year contracts.
It was a 2 year contract.
Until the post-revolution America.
But he could certainly get
but
fired.
But is he on the hot seat? Like,
yeah.
Or is he now given 2 more years where he doesn't have to worry about his
If he
job?
Bombs, if he has another 6-10, he gone. Come on. I would think.
You rarely see coaches on the hot seat in the NFL who have as much say in personnel moves as Marvin Lewis does. It's weird that he would be on a hot seat, and yet
weird.
His coaching staff is the one making the draft picks in concert with Duke Tobin, but his coaching staff does as much homework on the draft picks as any in the league.
I mean, Mike Brown almost admitted that the way that season ended was what got Marvin Lewis hired again. Those last weeks made a big difference for him.
There have been at least 5 off seasons where they could have decisively moved on from Marvin Lewis and the entire experience, and I just don't see it happening unless – you know, Brown thinks I'm going to go basically get John Harbaugh. They want to fire John Harbaugh in Baltimore. We'll take someone else. But it's like he's going to have to be so convinced of a candidate better than Marvin Lewis, because the Bengals, to me, as much as you want to, they had a nice draft, and you feel like it's going to be the Joe Mixon show. You're going to get John Ross back. That helps. But at the same time, I look at the Bengals and it's like, have a nice 8-8 season.
Yeah. That's sort of how I feel about them, too. I mean, they really struggled to run the ball. Joe Mixon, he was only at like 3.5 yards per carry last year. And all that stems from the offensive line, too.
What about the John Ross wipeout season last year? Tyler Eifert. I'm sick of talking about if Tyler Eifert's healthy, but is there
they got players
an upside where
it's
they can
It's not a bad roster.
I don't mind Tyler Croft, for that matter.
It's not a bad roster.
I don't have a room for improvement.
The Cleveland Browns. 1 year ago in this very exercise, Mark Sessler said this about his Cleveland Browns.
I get it. You do all sort of charity work. Stand up. Be braggy. Be, you know, please. Absurd.
They responded. They responded to the Quiet Storm's fighting words by pooping out an 0-16. But this is a new day. Trades, free agent spending spree, a new GM. He's a Cowboy. A sexy draft class. And the number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield. With Tyrod Taylor presumably behind center this season, that's what we're being told, is this the year that the Browns finally get their respect back? Or do they have a head coach in place that will make it a situation where they have to wait to get him out of the building until that can happen? How big a problem is Hugh right now?
They're so talented that I don't think that Hugh or Haley or Greg Williams can blow it. Because here's why. If they win 5 games, everyone's going to be cool with that. I really believe that. And I feel like that should be the floor for this team. 4 in a terrible worst-case scenario, or 5. Because that should mostly be a worst-case scenario.
4 in a terrible worst-case scenario for the Browns.
For most teams, but this is a talented, normal team, and I just think it's going to be hard not to win 5 games. And I think people will be kind of happy with 5 games, and there is upside to do better.
I think it depends what type of 5 wins those would be.
Dan and like, West not buying me.
No, I did listen to I listened to last year's around the AFC just to see how insanely off we were on some things. Overall, as a group, not too bad. Some things were remarkably dumb, but what I said about the Browns was embarrassing, because it's the same thing I say every offseason in early May, and it's you're imbued with this optimism coming off of 8 players that, you know, not as a major college football watcher, they all seem great to me, and everything they've done seems great. But the one thing that I think sticks 2 years, 3 years in a row, they should have won more games 2 seasons ago. They could have won more games last year, I think, with a better coaching staff. And so if you start 1-7,
minus 1 minute,
they're going to have to overhaul everything from the coaching side. It is all there is so much pressure on this coaching staff. They have talent.
Last year in the same exercise, my question was, without the quarterback in place, why should we think they'll be any better than 1-15? But they actually have now
a quarterback. They have 2 quarterbacks. They haven't had any quarterbacks, and they have 2.
We don't know anything about Baker Mayfield, but plenty of possibility with him. But they have in Tyrod Taylor, Wes, a guy that can get in there and win some games. This is not crazy to think 6-10, 7-9, right?
Yeah, this is the other half of my Tyrod Taylor opinion. He's much better than A.J. McCarron, but he's just good enough to get benched every single year. He's going to get benched because it happens every year. He leaves a lot of things on the field that drives coaches crazy. And one thing we've seen in the fallout of this draft is that most of the NFL had a very high opinion of Baker Mayfield.
I was really surprised with the Denzel Ward pick, by the way. I thought for sure they were going to go Bradley Chubb, but I guess that just shows how much they really like Emmanuel Ogba there.
Greg, the Denver Broncos.
You know, John Elway gets songs written about him, and he's very confident that he gets his man. Well, he hasn't had a good draft in about 7 years, since about 2011, one of the worst drafters in the NFL. But looking at this draft, getting lucky that Bradley Chubb fell to him at 5, everything we hear about Cortland Sutton, the second-round pick, did Johnny Boy finally get a double, let's say, in the draft and do enough to get the Broncos right back in the mix?
I think he did. I really like the Broncos draft. The biggest question mark on the team is the quarterback. And a lot of that, as we've seen the past couple of years since Peyton Manning retires, do you have the running game and offensive line to support a borderline NFL starting quarterback? The last 2 years, the answer has been a definitive no. And I'm not sure what's changed now, but I like what he did in the draft. It just might take a year or two before that offensive line and ground attack are good enough to support.
They didn't really add anyone on the line. So they're basically, you know, they added Jared Valdir, who was a problem for the Cardinals last year. And otherwise, they're kind of hoping that the guys that were there are better.
One question about Case Keenum, because in this room, by the end of the season, we were saying Case Keenum is not a fluke. This guy all year has played like a true, you know, top 15 quarterback. Are we now downgrading? Because there are some weapons in Denver as well that he can do some damage with.
I think it's because he's 30 years old.
Which is not old at all.
But outside of last year's stunning season on a Vikings offense that really did not have a major weakness, even when they suffered injury, that he thrived in that offense. But it's fair to look at the other body of work that he's produced and say, will he go do it again in a completely new system with a new team with the issues that Greg just mentioned?
I think one of the things we've learned over the years, and we all ought to know it by now, is that outside of 10 or 12 quarterbacks in the NFL, every single quarterback must be surrounded by a strong running game, offensive line, play caller, all of that. So much depends on that. And when I look at the Broncos,
that's their weakness.
Yeah,
they don't have that support system that the Vikings had.
That's a problem. On defense, though, this is the team that got Bradley Chubb. And when you have him and Von Miller in there, that is like, that reminds me of how the Broncos used to be and how they really used to get after the
quarterback. It's also a defense that needed a shot in the arm because they haven't been as good since their Super Bowl year, which was a very high
bar. The turnovers killed that defense last year. They were like suddenly defending an offense that picked the ball off, and they have 15 yards to go for a touchdown every week.
He hasn't hit on picks, so they've gotten thinner. But Derek Wolfe, Von Miller, Shaq Barrett, you got Shane Ray as maybe your fourth, you know, pass rusher. If you can have one of the better pass rushes in the league, then you got a chance.
Any other thoughts? Let's move on. Next up, back to Mark Sessler. The Houston Texans.
I deduced that was coming to me because there's no team in the AFC whose city name begins with E. So I knew that H was coming around the mountain there. Anyways, I realized that the Texans, they didn't
pick. Alphabet knowledge.
There we go.
Sherlock Holmes.
They didn't pick until the third round, and so I feel like they kind of just got forgotten this weekend, and they really did. It's like, but at the same time, I like to pack in why that didn't happen because they got Deshaun Watson last year, and I still look at a team that their biggest issue was that offensive line, and they did a lot in free agency to shore up that line with versatile guys they can move around. They got someone in the third round as well, Martinez Rankin, a Dan Hanses prospect along the line. So you're now giving Deshaun Watson, who had this insane five-week stretch where they averaged 35 points a game under him, and then the whole thing went away. Why can the Texans not be an AFC title game team? Because I think last year they were one of the weird teams that could have beaten New England in the playoffs. They haven't changed that much except for improving the line. Why is the
concentration
while I'm doing
this? Very good. Yeah.
What on earth is happening?
two things.
It's around the AFC.
One, is the offensive line actually improved? Because the guys they brought in
are
rejects from other teams. Mm-hmm. They're guys nobody else wanted, and they're not that impressive to me. So the offensive line is the first question I have. And the second one, can J.J. Watt stay healthy?
That's a real question now.
Well, they were flaming teams without J.J. Watt last year. That's all I'd say on offense. Like, if you're scoring, they scored 57 points against the Titans. Easy to forget that kind of a game.
It was eye-opening what Watson did, and it's very exciting to think what he could do in 16 games. But the Watt thing, and you don't want it to turn into one of these what-ifs because there's nothing worse than when there's a real, like, all-time type star that you get to see it for 5 years and then it just disappears due to injuries. And now it's fair to ask. Last year you could still stay positive and be like, all right, he's finally over it. But now is Watt ever going to be Watt again? And I thought Jadeveon Clowney took another step next year, but he still isn't maybe the superstar that they thought he was going to be. There is room for growth on that defense.
I love what they've done with the secondary, though, when you bring in Tyron Matthew and Aaron Colvin, and then you draft Justin Reed. That, I mean, their secondary, when they had A.J. Bouye there, it was great. And then when he was gone, that was a major weakness for them last year. So I think that that's really improved over the offseason.
I can't tell if I think they're a candidate to be 4-12 or 12-4. Like, they could be either way because their problems are pronounced. They kind of look like a top-heavy roster with some stars, but then some big issues and maybe not great depth. But O'Brien's always been able to figure it out. And if Deshaun Watson is half as good as he looked in
Would that include teams, like, with the sample size that you got from Deshaun Watson, the teams have used time to have an antidote to what he...
I think it's fair to not expect Deshaun Watson, you know, to not light up the league quite as much as he did.
Because
it would be insane if he did.
4-12 would be maybe a Vince Young-esque downturn, though. Interesting. Chris Wessling, the Indianapolis Colts.
after their draft and free agency. And
I like how calm Wes comes in.
Yeah.
Very under control. Go ahead, Wes.
Start playing that music under him, see what happens.
Put that Mr. Rogers sweater on, and he's in complete control. Give him the 3 minutes. Give him three more minutes. Go ahead, Wes.
Well, with Andrew Luck.
It's all yours. Talk for three straight minutes.
With Andrew Luck returning to health, starting guards in each of the first two rounds, some interesting running backs and wide receivers late in the draft, it's easy for me to believe the Colts will have one of the most improved offenses in the league. But the other side of the ball, is there any defense in the NFL worse than the Indianapolis Colts?
Mm. Yikes.
Problematic.
You cannot expect rookies to come in and all of them to be hits. In fact, most rookies are competitive liabilities in their first year, and they're going to be playing a lot of rookies. The secondary, I can't even make a depth chart out of their secondary.
And they need guys that they took last. Part of it is last year's, you know, draft class. Malik Hooker, Quincy Wilson, that those guys need to be – they're Ballard's guys that they need to step up and matter.
What's your favorite type of frog?
Yeah, I mean, you look at their almost every position group, and it's who are your blue chip, like, five-star players that you're anchoring on. The last four or five teams we talk about, J.J. Watt, Von Miller, you know, rookies that are coming in that are game changers. And with the Colts, they had so much to do,
it's like
so much
to accomplish.
They've got Jabal Sheard.
You know what they need? They need, like, a Saints-like draft because they took this Darius Leonard, the outside linebacker, round two. They took Kimoko Ture. Yes. Out of Rutgers, and then another defensive end 12 picks later. So they are – obviously, they see what you see, and they just need to hope that they're scouting.
They had four second-round picks. That's unheard of, four second-round picks.
Literally unheard of.
Back-to-back guards.
I've never heard of it.
I love Quentin Nelson, though, for them. Like, that's a
that's
perfect. That's the best guy that they could have gotten in the first round for that offensive line.
Dan, are you jealous that Chris Ballard this week invited – reporters in down into their lab to watch film with him so that they could understand why they drafted who they drafted.
I like that little pullback of the curtain.
Chris Ballard outreach.
A departure from most of the scared NFL personnel around the league who think that everyone's trying to get their secrets.
Wait, but why would I have an issue with that?
I don't know, just because you're a big Ballard fan? You just want that quality time.
Other people are getting Ballard quality time?
Didn't quite make sense.
Yeah, but it's good that I didn't know that nug. That's a good nug.
Little BQT?
BQT. Mm. Big time in a big spot. I just hope Andrew Luck's playing for the Colts. Come on, buddy.
And they
That's a major
Stretch
question.
It out, baby.
Like, wait,
out
right, that's wing. Their blue chip talent. And they drafted, like, guards high. And so, in theory, that helps out their running game. But their running game is either Marlon Mack or two third-day guys that they drafted this year,
or
Hines and Wilkins. Or it works.
Or what? The Awakening, Kristen Michael, who re-signed with the
Don't pull us back into this dark corner.
You can play.
I love it.
All right, next, Tiny Box.
Tiny Box is on the clock here. All right, so I like what they did in the draft. When I looked at these wide receivers before the draft, I mean, letting go of Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, it was a mess. And it still is a little questionable. They drafted DJ Chark, who's a really explosive wide receiver. But beyond that, they have Dante Moncrief, Marquise Lee, Rashad Green. It's not a great group of pass catchers. I do really like what they did at defensive tackle, Taven Bryan. So they kind of are doing what the Eagles did last year. They have a ton of depth there, and they can rotate guys in. But really, how much do you guys trust the Jags can continue to climb in the AFC with Blake Bortles and this group of pass catchers?
Outside of the most important position in professional sports, their roster is better than anyone else in the NFL.
Right.
That's why the Lamar Jackson thing was so scary.
Here's the thing, though. Is their offense is it great at all? Fournette, I still think the book is out on how much of a difference maker he's going to be. And then the rest of the offense.
He already was a difference maker.
I guess.
Like, literally was a difference maker.
I want to see. First of all, they had their best games of the year without him. I think that was a coincidence, but it's just a fact. I think he has to prove to me that he's in that sort of upper echelon of, like, running backs, like the Todd Gurley, that type. I don't know if he's there. Like, I watching him game after game, I don't know if he's there. And then the rest of the offense, not just Bortles, and Colleen mentioned it.
Well, I like that they went out and got Andrew Norwell at left guard. Where we saw the Titans last year. Who would have thought, oh, the Titans are going to completely lose this identity that under John Robinson we thought was such a nice change in Tennessee for once. There's something to latch onto. It vanished entirely. I don't think the Jaguars do, because their defense is up and down, a completely badass team that can – I don't see a regression on defense. Now, I'll listen to this a year from now and probably laugh
T-minus
myself. But
one
I still
minute.
Think that they can run the ball. They still have a good offensive line, and I don't doubt Fournette the way that you do in terms of, like, being a true difference maker.
I don't doubt him. I just think he hasn't shown that, like, next level of, like, this is a guy you build an offense around. He's shown he's a solid starting running back, and he does some things.
Here's what their moves, including the way they played in the playoffs, show me that Blake Bortles' psyche is so fragile he can't possibly face competition or even a high-quality backup on that roster.
And that's how you end up with Cody Kessler. Now, if times get
Tanner
tough,
Lee.
If times get tough in that organization and they are, you know, 4-6 or 4-5 and the quarterback is what's killing them, Cody Kessler? That's the guy?
That's the problem.
To answer your question, I'm not confident that they can take the next step, because I think it's one of the hardest things in the NFL to do, to be a top five team more than 1 year in a row. And it's easier if you're good on offense. I always think it's easier.
That's fair, dog.
All right, it's halftime.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, already?
And now, another edition of Keeping Up with Boeing.
You remember Mo Reitz Boeringer?
I forgot.
You remember Mobo.
This
he
is
came
that,
into
what's
the
Mobo
draft
up to?
In 2016 with the Vikings. Didn't make it with the team, a roster limit casualty before the 2016 season kicked off. You thought Mobo was gone? You're wrong, baby, because the former sixth-round pick of the Vikings signed with the Cincinnati Bengals. He was added to their roster via the league's International Player Pathway Program. The team announced as part of the program four teams: Cincinnati, Cleveland, Baltimore, and Pittsburgh. That's the AFC North. Interesting. Will each carry a player from the program until the end of training camp.
And that was another edition.
Yet not beyond.
Keeping Up with Boeing.
We're just assuming that these people don't make the team.
Well, if they're not, yeah.
I'm assuming that Moritz Boeringer, who we never heard a peep out of in Minnesota, will not make the Bengals.
You know how sometimes you have to kind of, like, explain, like, tell you to explain a reference for the listener. That's the first one I needed it explained to me. It's been so long since we
heard. Was that you two that was playing?
Kind of. Kansas City Chiefs. It's German music. The Kansas City Chiefs. The splashy focus of this offseason for KC is centered around the trade of Alex Smith and the rise of Patrick Mahomes. But the real question facing this team is whether their defense is worth a damn. Certainly didn't look that way in the playoff loss to the Titans, where they couldn't get a stop in the second half. My God, what a disgrace. KC invested their first five draft picks on the defensive side of the ball last week, but will this unit actually be any better? Trading Marcus Peters away probably won't help.
I don't trust their secondary at all. I don't think their defense is going to be better.
On paper, there's not much reason to think it's much better, other than they just got rid of some old, aging, slower guys who are maybe being held on a little too long because of their names. It's a smart thing to do.
I don't think bringing in David Amerson as a starter is going to make your secondary better.
They paid Anthony Hitchens a ton of money. One of the most surprising contracts in the league, I thought, this offseason, because they think he's going to be a pretty big difference.
They believe in Reggie Ragland as a guy that can make a difference.
D Ford could be
so
healthier.
I agree with that.
Kendall Fuller is a good pickup. I mean, people, you know, he's one of the better slot cornerbacks in the league. They should be better, because I don't think it's going to be hard for them to be much worse than they were.
But that's, I mean, they need to be better than a little better.
Yeah, I don't think adding a slot corner is the solution to replacing Marcus Peters.
The team could still be a lot of fun. I think they could still.
Well, they also get Eric Berry. You know, one
they
of
get
them.
Eric Berry back a year or older and coming off a serious injury, but you don't doubt a guy like that. But their offense is going to be exciting. They're going to score points if Mahomes is good. Chiefs fans out there, I'm not wishing this upon you, but there is a dark scenario where all the assumptions that Mahomes step in immediately and be a Pro Bowl level quarterback, if there's growing pains, or God forbid he's not actually that good, then they might actually be a bad team. They could really take a big step back this year.
I like pairing a rookie quarterback with Kareem Hunt better than some of the other rookie cornerbacks out there. And you know, you went out, you got Sammy Watkins, You still have a lot of speed. You have Tyreek Hill. I feel like they prioritized putting stuff around Patrick Mahomes to help him succeed. But unquestionably, it's a variable. We've seen one game and it was a promising game. And they love him, but it's like you got to see it.
We've seen 20 years of Andy Reid, and that's the kind, and what he's done, especially in Kansas City. That's kind of why.
I don't doubt it. I'm just saying we shouldn't assume it.
Yeah.
No, it's quite possible that they'll be much more exciting to watch and much less effective in the one loss column.
Yeah, it could be a really explosive offense. Like it's really interesting to think about Sammy Watkins as that downfield threat, but also like. I mean, it's not just the secondary, as you mentioned, in terms of the defense. That run defense was a major problem last year. That's what got them killed in the playoffs.
Could not get a stop against a Tennessee offense that was not blowing people's doors off last year.
How about my guy Brett Veach drafting Reggie McKenzie's son?
Now he's your guy.
Greg, your boys, the Los Angeles Superchargers.
Yeah. Well, after, you know, Tom Telesco had another excellent draft, Derwin James falling to him. A lot of people who, you know, look, I don't know, but people who know better love Uchenna Nwosu, their second-round pick, and it got me thinking. This was a defense-heavy draft. Uchenna Nwosu?
That's correct, actually.
Which is better? Because they're both – they're pretty stacked on both sides. Which is better, the Chargers' offense or the defense?
Is when you're feeling good about a team, and that's the question.
This might be a defense-first type of team now.
What is more amazing, their offense or their defense?
That's my question.
First of all, great question.
Now Wes's turn.
Thank you.
Great question.
It's a tie.
This team is absolutely loaded. They remind me of the Jaguars where everyone said, hey, I'm not going to believe in the Jaguars, even though that December – before, they showed they were one of the best teams in the league. The Chargers showed us they're one of the best teams in the league down the stretch. And I think they're ready to take that
great
jump.
Great dancing.
The personnel is it's almost unmatched. I would take the defense because the strength of this team is the best pass rush in the NFL with Bosa and Ingram as the two pass rushers. Now you add Nwosu. And the offensive line, to me, still has some question marks. That the running game never found itself last year.
Fair.
The offensive line, a lot of that sack total, which is one of the best in the league, is because Philip Rivers is a genius before the snap, and he gets rid of the ball quickly. I think the defense is legitimately a top 3D.
Rivers stat you had in comparison to another quarterback?
Paxton Lynch got sacked. He's been sacked 18 times in his career on 128 attempts. Phil Rivers got sacked 18 times last year in nearly 600 attempts.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you've got Caleb Sturgis in there at this point. Listen, here's the thing. You're not going to start the year 0-4. And the one thing that kind of gets forgotten is that there was a kind of a mid-season game against the Patriots where the Chargers gave the Patriots a run for the money. You're gonna go 4-0 more likely than 0-4.
Since 2010, 9-7, 8-8, 7-9, 9-7, 9-7, 4-12, 5-9, 9-7. I'm just saying.
You could say the same thing about the Jaguars before last year, too.
Okay. So
I can't believe Derwin James fell to 17.
Next.
That's shocking.
Mark
Sessler. That the 3 minutes?
Wow. That
we could go on and on about the Chargers.
Can we? Around the Chargers podcast coming up Saturday night. The Miami Dolphins, Mark Sessler.
All right. Someone solve this Nancy Drew level mystery for me. Who are the Miami Dolphins? What is the plan here? What is the identity? When will this become evident to anyone living on Earth? Too bad, Lindsay. Nice try with the music. Question over.
He got you. What's their identity?
Help me out. I came out of the draft even ultra frustrated with the Dolphins.
I got nothing for you.
I mean,
I don't know what their identity is. I don't know what the plan is.
Neither is the head coach. He told us.
I feel like he couldn't have broadcast that to us more strongly, and he didn't want to.
I mean, I guess what was the draft going to do to change it unless they took a quarterback? Because they took Fitzpatrick, who is kind of what they could use, is a versatile guy that they can move around in their secondary. They drafted Mike Gesicki, which is about as exciting athletically at tight end, a huge position of need. So they did add guys that
positions
of need.
They didn't address their biggest problem on defense. They didn't even – they never replaced Ndamukong Suh. That's the one thing that they really needed to do.
You let the other two, you know, low-level – wanting teams in your division go out and at least try on quarterbacks while you did nothing. And I get the belief in Ryan Tannehill, but I mean we've seen Ryan Tannehill.
Well, I can't kill him for that. Like, they think they like Ryan Tannehill, but they have so many other issues to worry about. If they believe in Tannehill for now, if they stink like everybody seems to think they're going to stink.
I don't think they're going to.
I don't know about stinking.
Somewhere
I
between
just six
and eight wins.
Well, that's
always
the thing. They're trying to keep their jobs from Gase to their defensive coordinator is a new guy, you know, Matt Burke, to the front office. Like, all of them are just trying to make it to 2019 on some level.
I'm just struggling to find a more flavorless team that did very little to give us any indication of what their flavor is.
I mean, they lose Jarvis Landry, obviously. They got Danny Amendola. I don't know if that's
vanilla's the flavor.
Exciting.
T-minus Kenny and Drake. Minute.
There was a little.
I like Kenny and Drake a lot.
Yeah,
I like Kenny
and Drake a lot. Maybe he's the focal point of that offense, and Tannehill comes back, and he's efficient and accurate and the best version of Ryan Tannehill.
I love how hard you're trying.
They're just so boring.
Just trying to balance it.
I know you're doing.
No, I don't like the Dolphins.
No, you're doing a great job. I admire that.
But even when we said, when you threw out like about them possibly stinking, everyone was quickly like, no, we don't think they're actually going to be that.
I don't think they're 1-15.
Yeah,
we're like
seven middle
of the road. They replaced the interior of their offensive line.
They're on the hamster wheel.
They are. But it's not, it's weird because it's not like the NBA where you have to bottom out.
No, you don't.
There is an old Parcellsism, and maybe Tannehill fits this mold, that certain guys are labeled progress stoppers. They're not, you're not building towards something. They're not guys that you actually can count on. They're just there, and that doesn't allow your organization to grow. Maybe that's Tannehill. The Dolphins have to hope that's not the case.
Nobody has more Parcellsisms than Parcells.
That's true. Did I say Bill Parcells has a Parcellsism?
No, I just meant like he does have a lot of these little bon mots that people throw around.
Yes, he does. A lot of bon mots.
That's one of
multiple Sessler, bon mots.
It's one of his Sessler's favorite sandwiches.
The bon. No, no one's ever eating one of those again if I can control it.
Do we have any sandwiches coming this week?
I mean, you know, we used to all hang out together, like in the office during the work week. Now no one's ever together on the same page, so it's harder to have group meals.
Next time we're together, I'll get sandwiches.
That's
I got a new place that has
25 players, 25 cars.
What?
Yeah.
Cabs?
Best sandwiches in the city.
The defending AFC conference champions, the New England Patriots, Chris Wessling.
The AFC sometimes looks like.
Wes ramping it up again.
The AFC sometimes looks like the NBA's Eastern Conference. Has any AFC team done enough to stop our annual tradition of penciling the Patriots right into the Super Bowl?
Well, you know, I'd always take the field, especially in the NFL. I on paper, the Steelers still look great to me.
They haven't done anything to get better.
Right, but teams.
In fact, they've gotten worse because they lost
Teams get better
Ryan
all the
Shazier.
Time without like obvious offseason moves. Tennessee Titans, I really like. Maybe I'm getting too excited, but I like overall what they did in the draft and in general. I think the field's done enough, yes.
The Steelers, are they – maybe they haven't done anything? We just talked about Ryan Shazier, the loss of him. Did they adequately address that defense?
Ryan Shazier, who – there are weeks when he played like the defensive player of the year. Like, that's not a small loss. He was by far their most important defensive player.
Well, maybe the number one thing that other AFC teams have going for them is – organizational decay from within. This from an interview, Jim Gray and Tom Brady.
Do you feel appreciated by them, and do they have the appropriate gratitude for what you have achieved?
I plead the fifth.
I mean, think of where we are now and where we were in December, that he's actually now, Tom Brady is saying, I plead the fifth when asked if he's appreciated by his own organization.
Knowing that that response is going to blow up all over the
and
place.
And he quickly added three paragraphs of how much he loves Bill Belichick, how much he values him, and that he knows that Belichick thinks essentially not giving it up for Brady is the best thing to get it out of Brady.
Right. It's called backpedaling. Why did you open your statement
Greg,
with that very
a little
bizarre
bit ridiculous
comment?
Stuff. How could you completely brush aside? Tom Brady knows exactly what he's saying. He went out of his way to put that out there in the public. It's just because
I mean, that question feels like a plant to begin with. It was a planted question.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's something.
Of course it's absolutely something, but I think – ultimately, the answer that he gave, he was having it both ways, was in the end, I know that I'm going to be there. He said he's going to be there for two more seasons, and he knows that in the end, he had to sort of like add that other part of it because he knows he's going to be playing there. When I look at the Patriots, I'm not really concerned about any of this off-field stuff. I'm more concerned that they've had an incredible amount of turnover this offseason. Their roster is as different as almost any AFC team in the league. Maybe that'll work out. Maybe it won't. But they have a ton of new starters on both sides of the ball.
I just think from that Seth Wickersham article till now, between what Gronk and what Brady are now saying out in public. It just shows you
it's uncharacteristic.
That this is a real thing under, that continues to haunt this organization.
Belichick can coach Brady as hard as he wants. He doesn't need to have sources going to Seth Wickersham and throwing Brady under the bus, saying that he's not playing well.
This is Brady's response.
Connie Fox,
shaky.
The New York Football Jets.
How about those Jets? You excited about them? That's my question. So, yeah. They get Sam Darnold. Your whole thing worked out, scamming for Sam.
Yeah.
But my whole thing is, even if Sam Darnold doesn't start right away because they have Josh McCown there, because they have like 75 quarterbacks on the roster, even if he doesn't start right away, do they have enough there to surround him to succeed? I mean, you talk about that offensive line was a problem last year. I know they brought in a couple guys, but is that enough? The pass catchers there, the tight ends, Austin Seferian Jenkins is gone. I mean, the tight ends they have on the roster right now have barely caught any passes in a game, let alone played NFL snaps.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe Terrell Pryor hits, maybe Isaiah Crowell does, and that would be great for him, but I just don't know.
That's to the ends of Wes. I didn't dare bring up the Jets when he said who's ready to challenge the Patriots. They're not ready yet, but they have some pieces in place, and now they have a potential franchise quarterback. So now the rebuild is in place, and I'm hoping, as a Jet fan, what I'm hoping for this year is Darnold starts 12 games, 10-12 games, and he shows something, and they, you know, they start to look like a team that's building towards something and doing a rebuild the right way, which they very rarely have in their history.
Are they just wasting a year? Is this Mitch Trubisky with John Fox? Is this Jared Goff with Jeff Fisher? Because I don't really get into – I don't buy any sort of rebuild if you're going to have a new general manager or certainly a new coach a year from now. Do they have the patience to go 4-12, 5-11? Because I kind of doubt Todd Bowles feels that way. He probably feels like, I got to win 8-9 games. This is my year. And if not, I'm looking at it like, are we just, you know, wasting a
year? In defense of the Jets, they have been, if nothing else, they've been stable. I mean, they've showed a lot of patience with this regime. And we'll find out now. I feel like now we're really going to find out if this is going to pay off. I like Big Mac. I thought last
year. This is McCagnan's plan.
Yeah, I think that on balance, I think he's doing a nice job with this team. It hasn't been easy. They haven't had a lot of results. But I think I'm really excited to see where this team goes this year because I think they can compete in the AFC.
I don't think you put pressure on this group of quarterbacks, and especially Darnold in year one, said have to get 10 wins or you blow up the organization, because now you can build around your quarterback, which the Jets have not been able to do outside of a couple seasons since Dan was born, essentially. Peyton Manning went 3-13 as a rookie. Things turned around quick, but it's not, you can't ask the Jets to do it all this season.
This collection of talent overachieved in the games Josh McCown played last year. I think when the Jets are good again, they're going to have a whole different new group of nucleus players. I don't see nucleus players on this offense.
There's no, like,
not
big playmaker on
defense.
Offense.
The defense isn't bad, by the way.
Last year's draft helped this defense a lot.
The defense isn't bad, and if Darnold comes in and makes some plays, and they have some wide receivers and playmakers. 3-2 I'm excited.
I'm glad.
But it's not time.
Can't wait.
Next up, the Oakland Raiders. Oh, that's me. I got so excited about talking about the Jets. John Gruden has been a busy man since returning to the Raiders. They've made 7 trades, 9 draft picks, a host of free agent pickups. It's a fairly radical overhaul for a team that was one of the NFL's biggest disappointments last year. Was such an overhaul truly necessary? Do we think the Raiders will actually be any better than last year's disappointing finish?
All I'd say is that a lot of people came out of last year, it sounded like players and others, unhappy with that coaching staff. And a lot of fingers being pointed at how the coaching staff handled that season. So I guess in theory, you've just put $10 in a multi-billion dollar bet down on the fact that John Gruden is the best possible coach you could have gotten. If that's the case,
and team build,
how could you be worse? You better be better, even though I don't like what they've done this offseason particularly much at all.
Well, not just offensively in terms of Gruden. That's, to me, an X factor. Like, how much better he – like, is he going to be a difference maker as a coach? That Paul Gunther, one of the more respected defensive guys in the league, is taking over for what was one of the worst defensive staffs in the league. So the coaches should be better. They should have the same players, and they have many different players, but they should be better.
I'm not crazy about what they did in terms of free agency on offense, signing Jordy Nelson and Doug Martin. I mean, that to me really, really isn't great, especially for a quarterback who's coming off a down season where he was hurt.
Is this even the third best team in their own division, or are they clearly the fourth best? If fourth best is not the way to say it. The right. worst.
To me, it's about, like, their offensive line was so good 2 years ago, and it was pretty good pass protecting last year. Penn, Osemele, Hudson, Gabe Jackson. Like, that was maybe the best offensive line in the league. If they are near that level, then they can do a lot
of things. I'm going to rephrase question for you, Wes. Do the Raiders of any AFC team have the highest ceiling to lowest floor ratio? Is it the biggest difference?
I think that's a fair assessment because I could see the offense going back to the heights of 2016. And Greg's point is good about Paul Gunther. I don't see the defensive personnel that's going to make them like go from toward the bottom of the league to middle of the pack. They might be able to cobble a front seven together. I don't trust that secondary at all.
It could be the worst group of cornerbacks in football, and they didn't take anyone until the fourth round.
Go look at the Colts roster.
But it's in that conversation.
That's a bad conversation to be in.
You don't want
to
be in it.
In the modern NFL, when you need like four cornerbacks.
49ers are in that mix, maybe. Like there are some. Yeah, they don't. And it's not like their safeties are great either.
I mean, we're saying Houston can go 4-12 or compete for the AFC title game, depending on who you talk to. So that's another high ceiling.
To me, that is my high ceiling one. I think it could blow up, but if
I think the Bengals are like that too.
Just listening.
That's it.
Mine's been 24.
Yeah.
And a relic of the aughts.
Like the Raiders season, we ran out of things to show the fans on that segment with a solid 10 seconds to go.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, the defending AFC North champions, Greg Rosenthal.
I'm going to pivot based on something our editor, David Ely, sent me during this exercise.
God.
Ben Roethlisberger quoted Thursday saying, the Mason Rudolph era, it's not going to be for a while. And my question is, like, is there any quarterback you would rather be drafted behind less than Ben Roethlisberger?
Right now.
That is not the guy I want in the room with me.
Oh, just by
in terms of his...
If you're Mason Rudolph...
His generosity to help a young quarterback
He's
grow.
Not in a Sam Darnold situation.
No. I mean, are we factoring in everything associated with Big Ben?
Yeah.
Because his injury history would make me say, as a quarterback, I kind of like that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm with Wes on this.
But you're taking sort of a Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers type angle here.
I don't think,
So we're working under the assumption that Ben Roethlisberger, which I'm not even prepared to do, actually, is a total monster to his teammates and won't be helpful and will try to aggressively stunt his understudy's development.
I agree with you.
But the positive is that he gets hurt a lot.
Big Ben's not worried about job security.
1 minute he wants to retire. The next it's like, this is never going to happen. I'm playing forever.
I don't know if he thinks about anything, Ben Roethlisberger.
Wait, Ben going on both sides,
honest here.
Both sides of the same issue?
I'm looking at every starting quarterback here, and Greg is – you're not wrong that he's got to be high on that list, Big Ben.
I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is cool with his understudies.
I mean, Brady got Garoppolo traded.
How about Tom – I was going to say Tom Brady.
Almost got him killed. He had to be talked out of it.
Just a little bit of pride with some of these guys. But I think Big Ben has got to be top two, top three.
It could be a good spot for Rudolph if they do play, because I know you mentioned, has the Steelers gotten better this offseason? Yeah, maybe not, but I think it's still the best roster in the NFL overall.
Don't we think
top
one of these
bottom.
Quarterbacks is a sneaky jerk?
I don't know who is better.
Wes is shaking his head.
No, I don't think their defense is good at all without Ryan Shazier.
Yeah.
They gave up 500 yards twice in five games without him.
Cameron Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, they should be better than they are. T.J. Watt, decent secondary.
I'm penciling them in again for 12 wins, whether or not that's good enough to get a home game against the Patriots, because that will probably decide whether they get by the Patriots. My feeling on that whole rivalry has not changed. No matter the defections in New England and the loss of Ryan Shazier and whether or not we thought they adequately replaced him, I feel like these two teams are still – it's like the old Yankee-Red Sox rivalry in the aughts. You just feel like they're on a collision course again.
I wonder if anything will change with Todd Haley not there anymore at offensive coordinator. Ben Roethlisberger were together.
Big Ben seems a lot happier, actually.
Rocket.
Like, yeah, so maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it improves.
Yeah, but for all of that, you know, you can make fun of Todd Haley. They were a good offense with him calling the play.
He just likes to have a good time at the bar.
Eight.
Don't we all?
Seven,
loses his balance.
Six, I'm not casting stones on that.
Five. Four. Three,
sometimes he gets a little, literally a little tipsy. I've never seen you take a spill.
Oh, that's about a 50% chance every time I walk out the door.
Close it out, the Tennessee Titans. Actually, no, you took a real belly whop rounding second, running to third once, I remember, on the shield.
Yeah, yeah, but he probably when the sniper got my hamstring.
He got sniped. Lee Harvey got your the back
up in the trees.
All right, the Tennessee Titans. Excuse me, the Titans turning over a new leaf in 2018. Mark Sessler.
I am just looking at what they did with four picks in the draft, and I came out loving general manager John Robinson. I don't know what's happening. I'll just play along with it. But what team did more with their four picks than the Titans? I feel like, and Greg, you wrote a good piece where you felt like they jumped up knowing the Patriots and snagged Patriots-type players ahead of New England, and they came in with very little. But I think even on top of Rashawn Evans and Harold Landry, there is no chance of them re-signing Matt Castle this summer because they also took a quarterback west. So
also, Matt Castle signed with the Lions. He is
that also helps.
Up Matt
I mean, what's going on in this with this production?
Your voice gets
it's
louder
just
and you
a,
talk
it's
faster.
It's such a tired bit. But you will keep at it. And I actually questioned Dan about it in the middle of the show. So I know that Dan is the ringleader because look at on his face right now.
How could you put it together?
Good luck. All right.
Just having some fun. It's a good song.
I have this Mark's Jets shirt that I bought for Dan. It looks like more of a woman's shirt for maybe it's for Dan's wife. Going right back in the bag.
Set it up, please.
bought it on the weekend with my own money.
Oh, no.
And you could thank Lindsay for that.
Oh,
ruined it.
Oh, how the worm has turned.
With his own money.
Poor Listed on his own petard.
With my family's money. Wow. As a gift for your family.
Why do these conversations always happen when we get to the Titans?
Is it too late to apologize, Mark?
Let's see. I may get to you at the end of the show if I'm feeling nice.
The history is all right.
The Titans deserve a little bit of bonus time, I think.
I agree.
Unrewarding.
All right, let's give them 2 minutes.
Wow. I love this. I'm feeling like it's a Titans type of time, Titans year. Like, I'm feeling the Mike Vrabel.
That's familiar, too.
Yeah, it's a little familiar, but I'm feeling the Mike Vrabel of it all. We've wanted their defense to have a little more difference makers, a little more fire. I think they have added that to some degree in the draft and with Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson certainly last year. I like that they kept Daquan Jones. I think they have a nice balance of kind of continuity and youth and just a lot
uniforms of uniforms a little better.
A lot of different things that you're looking for in a young team.
The secondary is going to be probably one of the best. On paper, it looks awesome.
It's a big year for Marcus Mariota, isn't it?
It's a huge year. And I think when I watch the Titans, the one thing they've been missing to me is playmakers, guys who command and draw double teams or beat double teams on defense. And I'm not sure if they have that or not. Deion Lewis could be one. Corey Davis, a guy they drafted last year and was injured most of his rookie year, could be one. Delanie Walker is one. On defense, maybe Harold Landry and Rashawn Evans, the guys you drafted, can be those guys. Right now, to me, when I look at their defense, Jarrell Casey's the only guy who fits that description. And maybe Malcolm Butler comes in and sets the world on fire, but I do think they're much improved. I just wonder if those difference makers are on the roster.
Little on the nose, the Patriots poach.
Mm. Oh, God. This is like New England South.
Yeah. Sometimes when that happens, you just feel like it's a little bit too cute.
It often doesn't work out. Yeah, it doesn't work out.
This does. I mean, the moves make sense, the Patriots that they imported, but we'll see.
When I went back and looked at all the drafts, I realized, like, no one's happy with their general manager's drafts, like history. Like, there's so many more misses than hits. But John Robinson had two great drafts. He is 2 for 2 in having great drafts. And when you start stacking those up, then you start seeing results.
But it doesn't matter. General managers all draft the same, Greg.
Well, he's on
We don't have time to go down to the lab.
All right, I'm giving you this Jets shirt back because I really don't even want it. But I want you to have it.
It's soft.
It's very soft. I think it is a – am I wrong? It's not a shirt for a man.
Yeah, you buy snug on daddy.
No, it's for Emily.
It's a scoop neck top.
It's for Emily. I have no evidence that she cares about the Jets at all, and it is odd that I'm buying clothing for your wife.
This is beautiful, Mark. Thank you very much.
Where did you see it?
Along Motor Avenue here in Los Angeles, there was a bin of shirts like that, and I thought, Dan's coming off a high point draft. And
was this on your way back home Saturday? No, that wouldn't.
No, this was on a Sunday, just walking.
How do you feel about the way that Dan treats your friendship?
It's largely positive. outside of some of these network like arrangements, please.
Mark, thank you very much.
You are very welcome.
And Emily, on her behalf, she thanks you as well.
I'm not convinced she's going to wear it. I've never heard her talk about the Jets.
No, she's not a sports fan, but she'll wear it.
Okay.
A little lazy day on Sunday outfit. I like it.
I really enjoyed the look on Mark's face as he was looking at the T-shirt mid-sentence and realized, wait, this is a woman's T-shirt.
No.
You sent me a text.
Yeah, I had other people tell me very quickly that's not a man's shirt, and I was like, yeah, you're probably right.
We will be back on Thursday. The old Zeuser is going to be out of town, but Connie Fox, you're going to be in the hosting chair.
I'm going to hold it down.
And I know you're capable of it.
Yep.
Just don't be too good, because then I'm going to get all the texts like, oh, Connie's coming for Dan's job. It's like, calm down.
Take your time coming
back.
You get texts about
it. Wow.
Yeah, take your time. Ooh, look out, Dan. Colleen's on the prowl. It's like, all right, calm down.
Mm-hmm. On the prowl.
Well, I am a wolf, so yeah.
That's true. So, this was Around the AFC in 48 Minutes. On Thursday, Around the NFC in 48 Minutes. I hate to miss it. I love this, but I will listen. And great.
It won't be the same without you, Dan.
I'll do some pod grading, and I'll share them on Monday's show, the following
week. Oh, I'm sure we'll be graded highly.
Great.
B-.
Try extra hard.
Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for The Quiet Storm. This is distracting. The Mailman, Connie Fox, the old boss, and Lindsay Fulton behind the glass on the ones and twos. Until Thursday.